Yes, come on in, join us. It is time once again for not a holiday edition, but a mid-December edition of Less Than Jays. It's transaction season. Things got kicked off last time we talked, where they were sort of, we were winter meetings, and there was a lot of consternation. The winter meetings had come and gone, and what are they going to do, and when are they going to do it? Who will they be in on, and what will they not be in on? We know now a little bit. We know that Kevin Kiermaier is a Toronto Blue Jay. We know that Chris Bassett is a Toronto Blue Jay. And the rest of the market, boy, it's moved a lot as well. So many signings, so many players, all kinds of places. Just Kiermaier and Bassett so far to the Blue Jays. Still have all three catchers. It is only December 15th. There's a lot of offseason to go. But it seems like the market is moving very differently. Cause for some chaos, cause for some confusion. It seems like every free agent that comes off the board is upsetting people more and more. And one of those people that I know is upset is my co-host this week and always, Jake Oldsby. You reacted with some real fervor. I would say an increasing fervor. And then we've gotten to Carlos Rodon signing with the Yankees for $6,162. And that's sort of the new peak of
it's good that it's a mid-December episode, because mid-dece is what I would call the offseason so far.
It's very interesting, because I think we feel fairly, not at all, but close. I feel like they had these clear flaws that they were going to address, and it's been about addressing the flaws on a small level. And I think some people are looking for things on a big level, right?
Yeah.
You look at the way last season ended. It's like they had plenty of offense. Like, they scored 8 runs in the disaster game. So that they had plenty of offense. You could downgrade the offense by a certain percent to get better at certain things. And whether or not you feel that those things have been addressed adequately is another conversation. But I guess I didn't commit to this expecting a big move. Like, I didn't think for a second they were going to be in on Correa. I didn't think for a second they were going to sign Rodon.
No.
Like, I'm not surprised they aren't in on these conversations.
I'm also not upset. Like, obviously, I would love for them to have been in on Correa.
Right.
But, like, I'm not mad they didn't give Rodon 6 years. And I'm not mad that they didn't give, what was the other crazy deal?
I was so happy they didn't sign Brandon Nimmo. And I know that's like...
Yeah, Nimmo's a great example. I think my issues, and we'll get into it, obviously, but I feel like they are... I think you're right. I think there were things that they wanted to focus on, but I think the way they approach focusing on their additions to what they want, need, seems to come at a cost to the rest of it. They don't seem to be like whole picture guys to me.
You don't think so?
Or if they are, they're not very good at it. I'll caveat all of this. This entire show with two things.
Okay.
One is that I will grant easily that it is mid-December.
It is.
And that it's very easy with the market moving as fast and as crazy as it did in the last 2 weeks to be like, well, they're fucked.
Sure.
I will grant you that it's mid-December. It's December 15th. So we are two full months away from pitchers and catchers reporting. And 3.5 full months to the start of the season.
Yes.
Plenty of time to make moves, make ads, change everything we're about to talk about. Could be tomorrow, for all I know.
Could be.
And as I said on Twitter, I reserve the right to completely flip my opinion here if they do something I like.
Of course. Listen, I think this gets lost in the discourse sometimes, where you're like, oh man, I wish they'd make moves. And then they make moves and people go, ah, see? It's like, well, yeah.
Right.
you can see how I'm also right. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And that leads me to my second caveat for the day, which is I just want to put it out there that it's okay to criticize a professional sports organization.
Sure.
You're not going to hurt Ross Atkins' feelings. And if you do, who cares? Like, you...
Well...
You have to know, and Toronto sports is really losing sight of this, except for the weirdly Leaf fans are the most adjusted about this. The first time Leaf fans have ever been well adjusted about anything regarding their team. But Leaf fans understand that you're supposed to tell your team that they suck and that they're no good and that they're doing things wrong.
This is that you would see this in the Yankees fans booing the front office last year and booing the team and them.
Yeah, booing Aaron Judge is crazy. But then
the front office is like, we can't lose this guy. We need to make the team better. I understand that. Yeah, and I agree with you in that. Sometimes people get spoken down on for like freaking out about inaction or for being like, hey, the Yankees are getting better. I'm gonna have a meltdown about this. I understand. It's funny. It's like I understand that, and I don't. I don't want to talk anybody out of doing it. It's that I personally don't feel meltdowny about anything that's happened quite yet this offseason.
That's fair. I'm a little closer to it than you are, I think.
Absolutely. But I also, like, I want to hold space for people who are, like, freaking out because it's so much fun. This is the whole thing. My greater point is, like, cheering for sports is, like, stupid. Let's, you know what I mean? Like, you have to open with that sentence and be like, there's no reason to freak out about the Blue Jays right now. But there's also no reason not to freak out. There's no, like, you may as well. Like, it's fun baseball. You can lose your post if you want to. You can freak out about the moves.
And also, the flip side is you don't have to, like, so stalwartly defend it to the point where it makes no sense.
But that being said, you can also like the moves a lot, right?
Yeah,
you can.
Of course. Other than the Teoscar trade, I don't think the moves the Jays have made have been bad.
Right.
On their own. It's how everything else comes together that I have the issue with.
So I guess to start off this conversation, I'll lay this out and allow you to sort of rebut. Is I feel like, if anything, it's almost too much to that degree where it's like, it's almost too big picture. Because I sort of have had the thought coming into this offseason was like, I don't expect to win the catcher trade in the way that a lot of people seem to.
Yeah.
And I think the Teoscar was what kicked me in this direction, is like probably being prepared for a offseason where maybe it seems like they are losing a trade, right? Like, they're probably going to lose the Teoscar trade. Things could break, but like in general, you're trading a reliever for an all-star outfielder. Like, the specifics of the contracts aside, it's going to be a hard trade to like flat out win. It is possible, and I hope it does happen. But just sort of that idea of like the moves are going to be made almost too much with big picture construction in mind, and like getting more about fit than it is about like getting the best guys in some of these positions. I think some positions like pitching, it's like it is a lot of the times as simple as get the best guys, especially starting pitching. But in terms of the lineup construction, and we've talked about this with deciding which catcher they may or may not keep, I think the thought of this is that like they see that they needed to do, they did certain things really well. They hit the ball hard, is something that a lot of the guys in the team do very well. The sort of the Teoscar approach, he's a free swinger and he's able to dial it down just enough. They had a bunch of those guys and he was the best one of the fit, but now they have enough and they need to have a different type. They didn't run the bases very well last year. They didn't, aside from the triumvirate of guys that they're replacing with Kevin Kiermaier, didn't defend in the outfield especially well. We're losing the shift next year. Don't forget the Jays shifted more than any team in the league last year. So like Kiermaier in center, Springer in right is sort of a bigger picture, bigger idea thing. My concern comes from all the like, as long as he can be healthy, is like every outfielder you're describing with that, they've all every one of these guys, it's really hard for me to be like he's, even if they do, I expect them to go out and get another outfielder still.
I do too.
Maybe Michael Conforto level, maybe not even Michael Conforto level. I'm officially trying to Conforto people, pill people, everybody.
I am pretty confident they're gonna get Michael Conforto specifically.
29 years old, always. Even his bad years were good years.
I think this speaks to sort of my issue, though.
What's that?
Like, the putting Bassett aside, because I'm fine with that move outside of him being a Blue Lives Matter loser.
But then we got Kevin Kiermaier, who is actually...
If we start caring about what baseball players think about political issues, we're never going to cheer for anybody ever again.
Yeah, he's going to be a real outcast as an outspoken Republican.
A white guy who likes the police in baseball?
Yeah. I expect he's gonna be a real. The guy, other guys in the locker room are gonna be like, I don't want to. Yeah, you're gonna band together probably.
But no, my issue is, I will admit, slightly unfair, I think. But it is real hard to look at what mostly the National League are doing and not be like, oh, that's how you win a World Series.
Is it, though? What Mets success are we talking about here?
Well, we don't know yet, because they just went out and spent $350 million.
They spent a lot of money last year, too? That's all I'm saying. Is like...
Conforto, like Kiermaier is a great idea if, and Conforto is a great idea if, and, you know, giving Kikuchi the fifth spot is a great idea if, Berríos is a great, it's just so much of the Conforto thing, I think, is sort of emblematic of my issue of how they're building this team. And this idea of, like, let's be honest, Michael Conforto hasn't played baseball in like 2 seasons.
Okay, but he was, but here's my counter to that, is people wanted like Bellinger and Gallo, who did play baseball the last 2 years and were bad.
I agree.
Like it's as likely to me that he shows up and is good as it is Joey Gallo is the answer to this.
My issue isn't Conforto himself. My point is, I don't believe that in the way that other teams are building their teams, the Jays should be, if the Jays are serious about winning World Series, going out and getting the if guys is the wrong way to go about it, is my point. Sure. Go out and spend the money and get the guy. You're like, that guy's going to be good. And I know it's not that easy. I know like teams are like, guys want to go to certain places, and the Jays have always had this sort of free agent chip, so to speak. But then go trade Gabriel Moreno and go get and I know this is simplifying things, and as I'm saying it out loud, I'm like, that's dumb. But it's also like, I just feel like they year after year, whether it's in the pen or now it's in the outfield or even the back end of the rotation, it's always just like, trust us, if this works out, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Rather than let's go and get a bunch of really good players.
The other outfielder thing is it very important? I can't stress enough how I sort of said it flippantly, like I do expect them to get another outfielder. It's important that they do it right. It really is, because to your point, it has to be somebody that can be a third. Like, I know that they came in and Kiermaier said, I expect to play in center field every day. We've watched this team our whole lives. The fourth outfielder becomes the third outfielder for a month, like at least every year. That's just baseball, especially playing in this city on this turf with the guys that are the ages that they have in the outfield now. Like, it's so funny to be like, okay, well, if he replaces the, what was it, he's like the super combination of Tapia and so, I mean, those guys had 600 at bats last year.
Whoa. Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's not a fourth outfielder. Those guys, Tapia played 128 games last year.
Also, and I'm sorry, to exactly your point, putting aside the fact that Kevin Kiermaier being your everyday center fielder is not what a serious team should be doing. Let's just put that aside. He's going to get hurt. Springer's going to get hurt. Lourdes is going to... All three guys in your outfield right now are hurt all the time.
That's the thing, right? Like... The fourth outfielder, Tap, if he played as many games as Tapia played last year, the most games he's played in a season since 2016.
Lourdes has been hurt, I feel like, every year of his career. Springer...
He seems to get hurt every September in a really freak, terrible way.
Springer is basically made of paper clips and old newspaper at this point.
Springer is currently, at this moment, injured.
Yeah, that's right. Kiermaier also shatters every time he dives. And now he's on turf. Coming off hip surgery, which he says is going to make him a better hitter, which, I mean, low bar, but...
Sure.
It really feels like they're setting us up for Gabriel Moreno and Otto Lopez manning the outfield for a lot of the season.
I'm already... I've texted a couple people this. My big prediction for a talking point in the middle of May next year is they got a bit of a piece with Otto Lopez. Some I've seen flashes. That's gonna be, people are gonna say that. I want you heard it here first. People are gonna say,
like,
Maybe they have something with Otto Lopez they're going
to
say.
I think this all speaks to sort of what my frustration is in that, like, I think Kevin Kiermaier as your fourth outfielder is a great pickup. Kevin Kiermaier is like the eighth inning defensive substitute who starts like 40 some games. Like, that's a great piece. Kevin Kiermaier as your everyday center fielder is crazy.
Like, when's the last? I need to know. When's the last time the actual fourth outfielder played like 40 games? Though, again, to my earlier
point. Yeah, like, you know, what Springer's, I'm saying fourth.
Springer's gonna DH, right? Springer's DHing.
We forget right. Then you need another guy to put out there. Then you need another guy to put out there.
At least.
And like, I think
ideally he's a fifth outfielder, but that's sort of beyond the point right now.
I'm not against signing Michael Conforto at this point. I welcome it.
I would love it, but it's just
another. We're having these conversations, and these are not the conversations you have about a team that's trying to win a World Series.
I don't know. I think.
Because it's not like we're saying they have three outfielders.
Right.
And, like, it's, you know, Harper. And because people keep saying, oh, well, the Phillies did it. It's like, the Phillies outfield is very good.
And, like, by that logic, are you like going to be happy if they win 87 games next year? But I also understand that the point of that is, and this sort of maybe brings me to my next point, because you made a point about sort of the teams that are making moves. They are mostly in the National League. It's like the Red Sox haven't done anything that scares me this offseason. The Rays, who I know this is a stupid thing to say, haven't added anything. Zach Elfin was a nice piece of business, but like they haven't done anything crazy. The Yankees obviously have brought back Judge. They brought back Rizzo. Now they've added Rodon. They're going to have very good pitching. They're probably going to win the division again. But nothing has really happened. Nobody's really positioned themselves. The Rangers, the Orioles, maybe.
You stick the Rangers seriously.
Maybe the Orioles are actually
the Orioles.
A bigger threat next year.
Really scare me.
But like in general, the Phillies plan is still very achievable in that you just need to get in and all these big spending teams
right, but
have
that's not a plan. That's just swinging and hoping.
And I guess my follow-up would be like, how did the Phillies respond this offseason to what they did last offseason?
Right, they went and got Trey Turner.
Yeah.
It's like,
if they do a Phillies run and then they immediately shop at the top of the market in the shortstop position,
sure.
I would be thrilled.
But, like, again, with the outfield, like, we're talking Lourdes, who I love dearly, but, like, is still Lourdes Gurriel Jr. And truly, as much as he, as great as he is and has been in his entire career, after all the injuries, I have no idea what George Springer is going to bring next year. I hope he's fine, but we have no idea. And Kevin Kiermaier. We are not talking Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, and Nick Castellanos.
Right.
Like, the outfield right now is just not good enough. And I think that's my thing with the Jays as a whole. They're not a bad team. They're a very good, as they're in the upper tier of the majors, and certainly, to your point, they're way in the upper tier of the American League. But are they good enough to win a World Series? I don't know, like, has the pen been shored up that much? They added the guy that Seattle won't put in high leverage.
I hate that I'm going to use that talking point as much as I possibly can until I prove it wrong,
but I
can't help it.
But, like, you want to talk about how the Yankees haven't added that much other than bringing some guys back and adding Rodon. Have the Jays been any different? Of all this talk about they're focusing on fixing these things, what has really been fixed? You want to talk about I know the big talking point is run prevention. And Kevin Kiermaier defensively absolutely is a run preventing guy. But like, other than Bassett, which unquestionably improves the rotation.
Yes.
If Barrios is halfway decent, you now have a very solid 1-4.
Absolutely.
No question about that. But like, of the big things that we're talking about that like they needed to shore up, have they really done any of it yet? Because I don't think so.
Yeah, I think that's a fair thing too, right? Where it's like you can like the Kiermaier Bassett moves in a vacuum. It's absolutely. Like the holes they're filling are holes that they've already made this year, right? The Bassett, much as we may like him, I think he's a safer bet than Ross Stripling, but it's like
still he's going. Guy.
He's going to, exactly right. Like it's a marginal, it's not this huge upgrade that like makes you unstoppable. And you know, it's not fair to do Kiermaier where Teoscar was, but you.
Oh, is it not? Can we talk about the Jays fans doing that today? I don't know if you know, but their war has been the same for the last couple of years. It's the same.
Well, couple. You're using the word couple years.
Same,
there pretty literally.
Same player, you know.
You're using the word couple years there pretty liberally.
He can absolutely if you scale out his.
I think that was since 2018. It's like okay, 2018. Gavin Kiermaier strolls through the door. We're having a different conversation.
If you scale out his plate appearances over the last few years to 162 games, he more than makes up for his production at the plate.
Well, I mean, listen, he was very good in 2019. And listen, also not very good. Pardon me, in 2019, in 2021. In 2017. So, listen, I'm also like aware that I'm going to probably like watching Kevin Kiermaier play. Let me say
that. Yeah. Again, I don't have anything against him specifically.
Right.
I like the move in a vacuum. But I just think that this notion that they're somehow good enough right now and you see what everybody else is doing and this notion that they're doing the Phillies plan, which I cannot stress enough is not a plan.
I don't think that they're doing, to be fair, I don't think that they're doing the Phillies plan. I just sort of, that was sort of an example of like, you don't have to win 110 games to make the World Series. Sort of what
sure,
I meant.
But you don't have to do a lot of things to win the World Series. You shouldn't plan for the worst. You should
very
be planning.
Yeah.
You should be planning to win 110 games. And if you don't win the World Series, fair enough. That's baseball.
It's very interesting. I've been thinking about a couple things lately. Just sort of like I also started wondering is like the reason everyone keeps talking about the Jays moving a catcher is that because that's the right thing to do, or is that because that's sort of the only piece of strength they have that they can deal from?
Yeah, I think it's probably both a little bit.
Other than the very newest pitchers they have that no one's seen really. Junior college guy pitching in single A, or the guys they just drafted. There haven't been many pitchers that you've heard thrown around, and it's not even like it was with Groshans, and he went for nothing, obviously, eventually. But like it's not even like you have this litany of prospects that you're hearing would be. But you know, these fucking trades happen and end up being nobodies, so who knows? But just sort of think it's interesting. It's like, we want a big go-in trade as well, but it's like, man, all they have is the catchers. There's no, as we can see from the problem with the outfield and the problem if they had a single infielder get injured as well. It's like there's no hot prospects other than Moreno beating the door down.
No.
Like, there's no offensive guy. The Aurelvis people like, and he hit home runs, but he also like never got on base at a very low level. Like there's not many other guys. Barger, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't think that. I don't think that, regardless of which catch they trade, I think you're right. I don't think it's going to be a like big ticket item, so to speak. But
we'll see.
But I don't think that. You know, I'm kind of stuck now based from what I was just saying about trying to win 110 games and then being like, well, it's not going to be a big ticket item in the catcher trade.
Well,
but.
It has to be free agency. Sort of the only the reason I think people get upset about the free agents is that it's sort of the only way that we are sure that they can improve.
Yeah.
There's no matter who gets dealt as a catcher, there's going to be doubt that they improved.
I guess sort of my point is, if I can sort of metaphor it with players that are available right now, and again, not saying this would necessarily be good for the team, or that the guys would do it, but I would like them to go out and sign Conforto and Gallo. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like not that like I'm sitting here being like Joey Gallo is going to fix it.
No, I get you.
But it doesn't just have to be like we need some run prevention. We got Kiermaier. We did it.
Yeah, I like, see. I understand that. It's basically I would call that like acting like the Dodgers, right? Where it's like we should have five great outfielders. We should have six great outfielders. What's this like scrimping by and hoping
right.
on, like
exactly. And like if one get, like, as you said and as we saw last year, if one goes down, all of a sudden you're like, well, there goes the month.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, just sort of looking at the roster construction.
And like they're in the luxury tax or pushing up against it, which is great. But a lot of that money is being eaten right now by guys who, I mean, a lot of that money is just not, you can spend money, but if it's not effectively building a roster, then who gives a shit? And I think it's great that after all the many, many years of sitting around saying, God, I wish they could spend like whomever, the fact they're pushing as luxury tax, I think is fantastic. But like that shouldn't be the goal.
Right.
And like if you're already pushing up against luxury tax, spend the extra $15 million on a guy to shore things up and, you know, go in guns blazing, so to speak. Like half measures in sports almost never work.
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting looking at the roster construction to sort of breaking it down as they have that, they have their sort of core six guys there that are, that have under 30 years old, Bichette, Guerrero, Kirk, Jansen, Gurriel, Espinal and Biggio. And then they've these very clear veteran additions around them. Your Chapman, Merrifield, Kiermaier, Springer, offensively. It's sort of, this is exactly sort of the playbook that they laid out for us, right? That we're going to develop some guys and put veterans around them, and this is it. This is sort of the, this is sort of the year. Like when you're looking at what you think the, what you think sort of the big picture plan is for these guys, it's this year. And that's, I think, fueling part of the way that you feel the way you feel, and I think other people do as well. You could say, you know, these guys are locked in the next 3 years, and you have most of the pitchers around for the next 3 years. So it's the, not that these guys didn't feel at the start of the window, but like, it's this, it's the start of like this being put up or shut up sort of in the next,
yeah,
that's it, and I, next basically.
I think that is the best way to sum up my sort of worry right now.
Right.
Is that the window is shrinking real quick. Real quick. And again, there's 2 months till spring training. A lot can change by the next time we talk on this show. It could be a very different situation. And we could be sitting here being like, they're in great shape. But as they sit right now, it just feels like, it feels like they know how to build a good team and they don't know how to push it over the top.
Well, I think, again, you know, I think we'll see. It's, I expect some more moves. And you know what? Let's quick pause, and then we'll talk about some specific names, and we'll sort of wish cast here after this. Okay, Jake. First, I guess we didn't really, let's specifically talk about the two guys they did add. Chris Bassett, 33, going to be 34 at the beginning of next year. Pretty good the last two full years, and also good in 2019. And you know, there's that slush fake year in between, but been pretty good for a while.
I will say, despite
pretty solid,
despite the fact I just spent the last 25 minutes kind of shitting on the Jays in the front office, of the 34-year-old Mets pitchers on the market, I am happy that they gave the money and term they did to Chris Bassett as opposed to the money and term that was given to Jacob DeGrom.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying Bassett's better, but if you're talking 34-year-olds and term and money, I think they did the right thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with Bassett in terms of, sometimes I think I get wary of like, and we do this with players we want to see them sign, is like, are you sure you're not inventing a guy in your head, right? Are you sure like the player you're hoping they acquire is real and you're not just like, they should get a lefty bat who always gets on base and plays center field and right field? It's like, are you sure there's not like only two of those guys on the planet Earth? Because not that easy. I think about what the ideal, like, don't have to think about it guy in the middle of this rotation is to take heat off of the importance of Berríos being good or not, I'd be describing Bassett of just like a solid innings guy who gets you 160 to 180 innings of reasonable baseball and gets the job done in day. That's I've always been, I had a soft spot for that kind of guy on the team. And I think exactly. But listen, the market is what it is. He's making 20 mil, where I think a few years ago he would have been in 15 to 16 range, but that's life.
I've no issue with the contract they gave him at all. I think the thing I like about Bassett is, as much as I love Ross Stripling and as important and as great as he was last year, every start last year, there was still that thing in the back of your brain being like, oh, it's Stripling. This could be the day it blows up.
Take him out. And, yeah, that was sort of the constant with Stripling.
Yeah, and I feel like Bassett is a similar kind of role in that, as you said, the kind of fourth guy to take pressure off if Berríos is bad. But I feel a little more confident in him going up there every 5 days than it was Stripling, just because we've seen him do it a little more than we have Stripling. Not that to take away from Stripling, I would have loved to have him back, frankly. I would wish he was our fifth starter. But I like the Bassett move a lot. I was very happy to see it. I don't totally understand, going back to our previous segment, the idea of giving him this money and then filling out the rest of the team as they have so far. But that's perhaps a point too early to make. But I'm happy with the Bassett move personally.
Yeah, me too. The other one, Kevin Kiermaier. Another move in what this season, offseason has been so far, where my gut reaction to it is to be like, ugh. And then I sleep on it and I wake up and I'm like, ah, it's fine. That's happened like three times.
The vibes are weird. Yeah. The vibes are weird.
I was like, fine. Yeah. Yeah. And then the next day I woke up and I was like, yeah, it'll, you know. I'm sure I will get some joy out of it. The Kevin Kiermaier, I mean, we all know he's an absolute villain. It has been for a long time. But like, for me, is when you look, it's so funny, you go to his like stats pages and it's like, he's such an ultimate, I guess I'm just believing the formula for good defense guy. Like, I don't doubt that he's a great defender, and people who are smarter than me who care about, who know these things, have proven it in some way, I'm sure. But like, doesn't hit at all, and it's like 2.5 wins.
Yeah.
Like, I guess he's just amazing at outfield. Like, he must be incredible. And I'm sure he is. And it's always a joy to watch a great center fielder who takes away plays. As long as it's out there, I'm sure it'll be a joy. Would love it if he hit even a little bit. That would be superb for me.
Yeah, I think that he's, you know, we saw it a lot last year when basically until Jackie Bradley Jr. showed up, where like there were so many games last year up to and including the last game of the year where it was kind of like, man, they really need to like a defensive outfielder out there in like the eighth inning.
Yes.
It happened a lot. And I think having Kiermaier to that, regardless of if he's playing 1-9 or if he's playing 7-9, when he's out there, that thought just won't happen.
It's just so funny to go to like the expert sites and they're like, well, he's basically what if Bradley Zimmer didn't hit the ball hard?
Oh, yeah, he can't hit at all. Like, I think that Jays fans are, because of all like the talk of he's these three guys in one and blah, 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 I think certain Jays fans are not ready for how not at all Kevin Kiermaier hits the baseball.
For all intents and purposes, he will be, he should be an upgrade on the, I would say the non-Tapia part of that triumvirate he's replacing.
Yeah, for
it's
sure.
It's an upgrade over Jackie Bradley Jr. And Bradley, he's better than Bradley Zimmer. No question.
Absolutely.
He'll be better than Bradley Zimmer was last year. I hope to God. You sort of have to be.
Yeah, you have to be. Yeah, no, again, I think, as we said, in a vacuum, it's a great move. And
I worry a lot about the durability. I worry a lot about the durability.
Especially if they want to play every day, which is a nightmare for so many reasons. But I think also, sort of to the point we were making before, in a vacuum, adding a guy like Kiermaier to your outfield staff is a move that teams trying to win make.
Yes.
You just have to add a couple other guys on top of them.
Okay, so that's who's in since we spoke last. Lots of people have been rumored. My favorite one that I'll lead off with, and I'll let you sort of bat back. Johnny Cueto. I can't even tell you how absolutely in on Johnny Cueto I absolutely am. I love Johnny Cueto. would rock for me if Johnny Cueto was the fifth guy instead of Issei Kikuchi. I would have a blast with that, I bet.
I will say this. At this point, as we currently sit here on December 15th at 10:38 p.m., any pitcher that is Cueto's level or above, I am thrilled if the Jays add.
Okay.
I am so worried that we are staring down the barrel of fifth starter Issei Kikuchi.
You don't even want to know how completely ready I am for, and this has started, how, like, Issei Kikuchi, useful lefty bullpen guy? I think I...
Oh, I, yeah, absolutely.
I'm so 100%.
Sold. 100%. And the other thing is, as you pointed out about the outfielders, your sixth starter will be your fifth starter at some point.
For sure. Mitch White will probably start games next year no matter what.
Exactly. Which, if you have an actual 1-5, that's just baseball and that happens. If Kikuchi is your fifth guy, and then suddenly he's your fourth guy, and White's your fifth guy, then there's trouble. Then you're in trouble.
Okay. So, Cueto, I have unequivocally signed off on mentally. I think what a revisiting, like a reframing of like villains.
I've always
a Royals player, Kiermaier, and Johnny Cueto. I
always dislike Johnny Cueto. I'll say that.
He's fun loving. He's lovable.
Look, I'm sure I would fall in love with him on the Jays in about 2 seconds.
He replaces your Teoscar vibes.
He does. That's true. Which they could desperately use.
I think it's just a funny reshifting of like you have Merrifield, who wasn't on those World Series teams, but like is a Royals guy.
It'd be very appropriate for this offseason. I'll
Cueto, who got booed off the field, and like public enemy number one, Kevin Kiermaier. Like the vibes move this year is to like overcome it with just like we're taking all of these tomes. These are luck charms we have to take back. So is there anybody that you've heard thrown around or that you'd like to make up in your head and officially say, here's what they're going to get?
For one that I'd like to make up in my head, and I don't think this is going to happen at all. And I guess also fitting with like the villain aspect as well. Just like, I hate that I'm even saying this. Just go sign JD Martinez to play DH.
I mean,
he has one purpose, and it's a purpose that we need.
I'll tell you this. Let's fully parse this out. Would you sign Nelson Cruz?
I mean, in my heart of hearts, yes. In my, the Jays should be trying to sign good players to win the World Series. No.
Nelson Cruz?
He's been not great for the last couple of years.
He hits home runs.
He's 40. He's almost 43 years old. He hit 10 home runs last year in 124 games.
Ah, damn. I was like, yeah, but. Yeah.
I will say he did hit 32 in 2021.
Right? Again, we're talking about JD Martinez. Hit 16 home runs last year in 140 games.
That's true.
He said 30 home runs more recently than JD Martinez. How about that as a different way to phrase it?
It's true, but JD Martinez also OPS'd almost 150 points higher than Nelson Cruz did last year.
Okay, crazy one. I like what your head's at. I can't even tell you how hard I laughed at the Josh Bell signing for the exact term. an actual true gift. I see your point, JD Martinez. I think it's a little crazy, but I love it. It's tough.
As we said earlier, I'm pretty confident in Conforto happening.
You got Michael Brantley is out there.
I think it's one of the. I think they're the two, not mm-hmm. both, but I think it's going to be one of the other one. It's either going to be Brantley or Conforto. I think.
I think Andrew Benintendi as well is sort of your top of the heap right now in terms of like guys that fit what they're looking for.
Look, if they if they were to sign Benintendi, I'd be thrilled.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. I don't think they're going to, but I would love
to. He's going to go back to the Yankees.
Yeah, I think so too.
You know what they should do is they should follow along with these, we're bringing back enemies and guys who have cursed this building and sign Elvis Andrews.
man, that would, as like the third, fourth outfield guy.
Minor league contract and invite to spring training and a chance to beat out Otto Lopez for a bench job.
Man, that would be
mark it down.
Something.
Mark it down as mark that down as something that it seems like I'm just throwing out and ends up coming to happen.
That would be very funny.
There's the 40-man crunch, but people make a big deal of that, and it's like, yeah, they're going to cut somebody who sucks. Like, what do you want from me? They'll cut one of the guys that we know sucks, probably.
Yeah, I think that's sort of, you and I were talking about this earlier this afternoon. Like, if they're going in and their bench is Biggio, some mix of Biggio, yeah. Espinal, Witt, and Moreno, like, that's not good enough.
You'd like them to be stacked.
Based on what has to be on the field, if those are the guys. Like, that's why I am now talking myself into this idea of just, like, signing a couple of more mid-tier guys. Right. Like, getting your Conforto and Gallo, or Brantley and Gallo. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
just another guy, a couple other guys that you can be like, let's, exactly like we're saying with Bassett, where he sort of covers for some stuff. I would like some of that on the offensive side as well.
If you want to quickly dabble into back into Raged Up, we're going to play Lourdes in right field as a psyop to get you to forget that they're playing Gabriel Moreno in left field. Don't fall for it.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Some of the pitching targets, we talked about this last time, but it's thinned out a little bit. Johnny Cueto, as I mentioned, you said guys at his level or low or higher, right?
Yeah, so but like, there's not much higher, I will grant you that.
No, yeah, I'm just going to look. I'm just using the market value sort of thing on SpotRac. Nathan Eovaldi is sort of in his range. Drew Smyly, Michael Wacha, Corey Kluber. You talk yourself into Corey Kluber?
I wouldn't want it, but if they signed him, I could definitely talk myself into it.
I don't think I would want to watch Corey
Kluber. I heard Andrew Chafin's name being banged about today for the bullpen. Okay. I'll throw a name out there that is against everything I've said in this entire show that I want to
have. Here we
go. Let's bring back Ken Giles.
What about Craig Kimbrell? Didn't they sign Ken Giles? Didn't they get Ken Giles at the end of last year?
No, they looked into him. I think Seattle signed him, actually.
Right. They looked into him from Seattle and then didn't trade for him.
Oh, no, Seattle had him. I forgot who picked him up in the end, but he didn't end up pitching, I don't think.
Go get super washed up Craig Kimbrell.
There's a bunch of really interesting super washed up names out there right now. You got your washed up Trevor Rosenthal. You got washed up Ian Kennedy. Washed up Adam Ottavino.
I would be going for slightly less washed up Taylor Rogers is the name that people.
I would like that.
Yeah.
It's somehow those, already washed up Archie Bradley.
This is one of those funny things. Relievers is always so funny for me, and sometimes this happens for infield players too. I think we just sort of went through it. It's like you go on these lists and you're like talking yourselves into people you don't know, and then you see somebody that you have seen pitch for the Jays and they're in the same class, and you're like, oh, right, like because you're doing this and you're like looking at lefties that are available, and you're like, oh, okay, so Zach Britton is there, Taylor Rogers is there, Chafin is there, Brad Hand. You're like, oh, right. So, right. So this could fucking, there's no reason that this would either work or not. Like,
yeah.
Brad Hand is in these classes. It's the Brandon Drury for me in the infield. It's like you're looking for infielders and you're like, who's around like 8 to 10 to 9 million? It's not Brandon Drury. Like, all right, of course. So it's like, literally, who knows? These guys could all be fucking garbage. There's no. So yeah, very interesting. So good picks in there. I wonder. Anybody else before we say goodbye? Anybody else that's caught your mind?
No, I think we've pretty much covered it. I think this has done a good job and talked me down a little bit. I will say that.
I was hoping to go the other way. I know you were.
I know you were. I feel like I'm not quite as worked up as I was, but the fact that it's December 15th is doing a lot of heavy lifting right now. Let's put it that way.
I'm a calm hand steering the ship. You know, I'm. My greatest flaw and biggest skill for this team is to talk myself into whatever they're doing pretty quickly my whole life. when they were doing Halladay Burnett, I was like, this is going to work. I totally get why this is what they're doing. They're trying to build a team on soft contact and grounders in a home run ballpark, and they're going to get good infield defense. Just wasn't the right time for that team. Anyway, I'm glad you talked down a little bit. I think we told the line between representing both the reasons why you should and shouldn't be worried.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
I've had this thought about the Raptors recently, and I want to sort of maybe this in a big picture closes out sort of the thought we had off the top. We were talking about not taking it seriously also means you're allowed to get worked up for no reason.
Yes.
The Raptors this season have not been good. They're below 500. And I am sort of positing for me as a casual basketball fan that I actually am enjoying it more because there was something to it was nice and comforting, but there was something to the like, well, you just trust Masai and Bobby and it's gonna work. Where like that is a super that's super chill and fun, but like it's also fun to be like, there's a puzzle here and it's not working and what do we have to change to fix? Like, it's more intriguing to me to have it be like, okay, something is broken.
Mm.
What do we do? Or even, you can even still be on Masai Bobby Island, right? You can still sort of say, well, it's like, well, they haven't really been fully healthy and you just need to give it, you know, Scotty's in a slump as a sophomore. It is the right recipe, you just need to give it time. Like, there's interesting conversation to be had, and I think the Jays are in a similar place. Where it's like it was all gravy the last couple off seasons where it was like they were a terrible 90 plus loss team and then it's like we're gonna get Ryu and we're like wow, like they got anybody, that's awesome. And then the next year it was like we're serious, we're gonna get Springer and we're like wow, this is awesome, this is they have these very present things and what they're doing is getting the most talented guy they can buy to fill that thing. And now, last year was almost like the pinnacle. The last 2 years we talked about, sort of like last year was almost a pinnacle of like the offense was exactly what you'd want it to be. Like, seemed like it could be overpowering. Did score again? Scored 8 runs in a playoff game. You just didn't get enough guys that you could trust in the bullpen again. And the randomness of it, the that's ball of it all, was the biggest collapse you could possibly have. And now you have to like sort of figure out like what are the edges, what are the small things, what's the construction change we can make versus what's the overhaul. It's not so easy, again, not so easy. And you're also right, the like, well, it also is easy enough to just be like good to go get the two top pitchers in the top outfielder. Like that is also an easy way to solve it, like not trading Teoscar and grabbing the best relievers from the free agent market is a way to do it. But just sort of that idea of like it's solving this little puzzle is going to be very interesting, and it's part of what has intrigued me so much with this offseason is like there's still so much to do. The Bassett and the Kiermaier things helps because the worry that I was having after the winter meetings wasn't that the team doesn't have a plan. I was like, I'm pretty sure they have a plan. I'm just worried that the plan is starting to veer towards, okay, we make 3 trades in the next 2 months and we nail all of them. It's like, that's a great conceptually,
yeah,
really, really, really fucking hard to do in real life. It's not as simple as it is in the video game. You just don't press advanced A, right? You have limited time. Teams have to want to trade with you. You don't, you know what I mean? Like, there's teams it's have to be deciding in December that they're selling. It's certainly easier
to go to a player and be like, here is some money, play baseball.
100%. And that's why watching the market move the way that it has, which we should note, very different than the last couple of years. I remember Bryce Harper didn't sign until spring training. Huge guys have been available up until spring training for the last few years. This year, the winter meetings was actually like an event and actually things happened. It's better this way. There's pressure on. The market is way different. We'll see if anybody wants to trade big things for the catchers. It's really intriguing and really exciting. And I totally get why people would have negative knee-jerk reactions to everything they've done so far. And I totally get why people would say, stay calm, it's going to be fine. I think I exist in both spheres. Maybe equal amounts.
Yeah, I think I think it's pretty clear that I'm definitely in the more panic sphere with the giant caveat that's December 15th. I think if the next time we do another one of these, so I guess our first show in 2023, if things haven't changed, it'll be much harder to talk me down. Let's put it that way.
2 week, you give him a 2 week deadline over the holidays. Ebenezer Scrooge.
Not a deadline, but just like
Bob Cratchit, back to work. You say
you gotta get going at some point.
Okay, well, we'll see you before 6 weeks. That's probably it. Unless there's a groundbreaking move, probably it for the timeline post. We have ideas of things to record for the Patreon that we're going to throw up in the week between Christmas and New Year's. But that is it. And again, unless they do something that impresses us so much that we jump back on here. And if so, there'll be a quick reaction on the Patreon and then a full episode on the timeline. But until next year, we say thank you so much for being a part of Less Than Jace.